a jagged diagonal flash of light superimposed on a pale sphere, the logo of Touchstone Pictures.
The earth is in a blaze.
Touchstone Pictures presents Tom Hanks, Irma P. Hall, Warren Wayans, J.K. Simmons, Zimar, Ryan Hurst, George Wallace, Diane Delano, Stephen Root, Greg Grunberg, in The Lady Killers.
Is strange and odd. What happened?
A gargoyle of a kneeling peasant, hooded and holding a scythe, juts out from the top of a tall, angular pillar, built in the 1920s style. A raven flies up and perches on the gaping-mouthed, hollow-eyed, hooked-nosed figure.
Oh, come, let us go back to God, go back.
The pillar is one of a row towering over a road bridge that crosses a wide river. Churning up the sluggish water, a tug passes under the bridge, towing an enormous barge of rubbish. It heads towards an island in the middle of the broad expanse of water. On the island, two cranes are piling the garbage into an artificial mountain. On the island and above the barge, seagulls wheel and swoop, scavenging among the refuse. In a small brick-built sheriff's office, a poster on the wall shows a black man in his 40s proudly holding up a fish. The poster reads, "Re-elect Wayne Weiner Sheriff. He's too old to go to work." Sheriff Weiner lies asleep in a chair, his feet on the desk. His overweight deputy sleeps at his desk on the other side of the room. The key of the single jail cell gathers cobwebs on its hook. A buxom, heavily built black woman in her 60s, in a floral dress, straw hat, and white gloves, bustles into the office.
Afternoon, Miss Mouse.
Afternoon, Sheriff. You know the Fontes boy.
McAtee Fontes?
No, not him. Wee Mac. McAtee's eldest.
Oh, yeah. I believe I do.
Well, he's a good boy now. Mm-hmm. But he done gone down to the Costco in Pascagoula and got himself a blaster.
What?
And he been playing that music.
Well, if you want, you know,
loud!
Well, I could go talk to him.
Left my wallet, Nel Segundo.
He left his wife.
Hippity-hop music. You know, they calls it hippity-hop music, but it don't make me want to go hippity-hop.
She turns to the deputy.
And Otha don't like that music neither.
Both men gape.
It's been disturbing Otha then, has it?
Well, how could it help but do? Left my wallet in El Segundo.
He left his wife.
Do you know what they call colored folks in them songs? Have you got any idea?
No, ma'am, I don't think...
Niggas!
Ooh.
I don't even want to say the word. I won't say it twice. I can tell you that. I say it one time.
Yes, ma'am.
In the course of swearing out my complaint.
Yes,
niggas. 2,000 years after Jesus, 30 years after Martin Luther King, the age of Montel. Lord of mercy, is that where we at? Mm-hmm. We Mac down to Pascagoula and getting himself a big old thump at the stereo so he can listen to that trash. Sheriff, you got to help that boy.
You want me to help him?
Extend that helping hand. Show an interest.
Well, we're here to help.
Well, God bless you for that. You don't want to be tried and found wanting.
No, ma'am.
No, many done tunk a low poison, Sheriff. Many done tunk a low poison.
Wait, what, ma'am?
You been tried and found wanting. You don't want that writing on the wall.
Oh, no, ma'am. Don't want that on the wall.
Feast of Baltazar.
Yeah, that sounds good.
The Apostle John said, "Behold, there's a stranger in our midst. Come to destroy us."
Yes, ma'am.
She leaves the sheriff's office and with a waddling, bow-legged gait, sets off down the road. Leaving the gargoyle bridge in the background, she walks through a run-down, sleepy main street of empty shop fronts. The woman, Marva Munson, comes into a shady street of large, old, white-painted wooden houses, goes into one of them, and is greeted by a marmalade cat. Above the mantelpiece, in Marva's comfortably old-fashioned sitting room, she lights a candle in front of a portrait of a stern-looking black man in a bow tie.
You need something to eat, Angel. Also, I went and complained about Wee Mac today. Don't know if he'd do any good. That boy hanging by a thread over the pit. Fiery pit. Left my wallet in El Segundo.
Marva sits.
Oh!
And picks up her knitting.
67 years of life. 46 years of marriage. You mean to tell me you never once suffered from pals? Well, it's the human condition. Most humans, anyhow. Like that ball player said, world's got two kind of folks. Them that's got the pals and them that's gonna get them. But you always was healthy as an ox. Passed on before you could get the pals. Mm-hmm. Ooh, thank the Lord you never was sick. Just want to pass away nice and peaceful.
She smiles at the memory.
Go to sleep one night, wake up in the glory land. Woo!
A breeze blows out the candle, the room goes dim, and the cat arches its back. At the front door is a man in his mid-40s with a cane and a black goatee beard, dressed in the cream three-piece suit and caped greatcoat of a typical southern gentleman.
Pickles!
As the cat scarpers, Marva gapes at the stranger.
Go fetch pickles!
Pickles?
Oh, he's up that tree again. You better shimmy on up.
Well, I do apologize, madam, but won't the feline eventually tire of his lonely perch and pining for his master's affection and return on his own initiative? The point being, must we actually ascend the tree?
Look, I don't want no double talk. Now, if you're not gonna fetch him, I guess I gotta call the police.
Police?
And they not gonna be happy. Every time they have to fetch him, they swear they never do it no more.
No need to call the authorities, madam. I did this often as a child.
He takes off his hat.
It's a positive lemur. Here, kitty.
Now, don't upset him now.
I wouldn't think of it, madam. Harmless little Felix domesticus.
He heaves himself up into the tree.
Kitty. Come to GH. Come, come. Here, kitty. Here, kitty. Come, come. Come. No, no, no.
That's not how Sheriff Weiner do it.
Pickles hisses.
Come, come, come. Come. Come to the professor.
Later, the bearded man sits in Marva Munson's parlor with a compress pressed to his forehead. She brings him a cup of tea.
Thank you, madam, for your act of kindness.
You let him out.
I certainly did, and for that I apologize no end. Allow me to present myself formally. Goldthwaite Higginson Doerr, Ph.D.
Like him?
I beg your pardon, ma'am?
Bud.
No. Ph.D. is a mark of academic attainment bestowed in my case in recognition of my mastery of the antique languages of Latin and Greek. I also hold a number of other advanced degrees, including the baccalaureate from a school in Paris, France called the Sorbonne.
Sorbonne. Well, that fits. You ever studied Bob Jones University?
I have not had that privilege.
Oh, that's a Bible school. Only the finest in the country. I send them $5 every month.
That is very
I'm
generous.
On the mailing list.
Indeed.
I'm an angel.
Are you? Yes.
Oh, they list my name in the newsletter every issue.
Do they?
Oh, I got the little tour right over here if you'd like to examine it.
Perhaps when my head has recovered from its buffeting. Ms. Munson, are you at all curious as to why I darkened your door, as the expression would have it, on this lovely, lovely camellia-scented morn?
Well, I was wondering till you let Pickles out.
I quite understand.
Then in all excitement, I just...
The fact is, I saw the sign in your window advertising a room to let, and there are no other such signs among the houses on this charming, charming street.
Yeah, I got a room. $15 a week. I'm looking for a quiet tenant.
Madam, you are addressing a man who is quiet, and yet not quiet. If I may offer a riddle, I am currently on sabbatical from the institution where I teach, the University of Mississippi at Hattiesburg. I'm taking a year off to indulge my passion, and I do not believe that's too strong a word, for the music of the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. I perform in and have the honor of directing a period instrument ensemble that performs at Renaissance fairs and other cultural fora throughout central southern Mississippi. We perform on the instruments for which the music was originally composed.
Now, wait a minute. You got some kind of band.
The word band would be, in this context, something of a misnomer. Though we do play together, hence the word ensemble, the nature of the music is such that one would hesitate to apply the epithet band with connotations of jangling.
So y'all don't play no hippity hop. I left my wallet in El Segundo. Songs with the title spelt all funny.
No. We play music that has been composed to the greater glory of God.
He spots a religious picture above the spare bed.
Devotional music. Church music.
Gospel music?
Well, inspired by the gospel, certainly. The vintage, of course, is no more recent than the Rococo.
Rococo, huh? Well, I guess that'd be okay.
But I don't propose to inflict our rehearsals on you. May I inquire, do you have a root cellar?
Marva opens the door to a large, dark cellar.
Yes. This looks promising.
A little dank, ain't it?
Indeed. That only improves the acoustics.
The visitor switches on a light and looks around.
Hurry!
Marvelous.
One wall of the cellar is made of soft earth. He pokes it with his cane.
Oh, these earthen walls are ideal for baffling the higher registers of the lute or sackbut. That is why so much music of the Cinquecento is played in crypts and catacombs. This is ideal. This is perfect. This is more than perfect. I could scarcely contain my glee.
Oh, you're containing it okay.
In a casino, a new cleaning operative is being shown the ropes.
You gotta peel this shit out. Sometimes it sticks to the bottom. Hey, she smells like rot. You wouldn't even believe this, man. Even out here on the casino floor, you're gonna find goddamn mercy pads, tucks. I don't know what the fuck people be doing here by the gambling.
Man, I ain't peeling no funky shit with my human hands. That ain't nothing but a prescription for diseases and viruses and shit attacking your fucking inside.
Oh, well, shit, you gotta do it, because Mr. Guz checks every day. Now, let's turn these back onto the land for all the people that work for Mannix. Mannix Corporation, they own the Bandit Queen, three other boats. Now, this is where they think on their corporate shit, Guz and him. I mean, the life's as ugly as all hell, but shit, ain't as many tucks.
In a corridor.
Let me in, motherfucker.
What's the password?
Kiss my ass.
The door is opened by a cheerful, overweight security guard.
Now, this is where they count the dough. Now, if you try to take any of the Elmon over there, shoot your ass. God damn! Dog, this is a motherfucking pigsty, man. You are a squeaky-ass motherfucking pig. Man, look at your ass. You got Cocoa Krispies on your uniform, got breakfast in, you still eating goddamn lunch, man. I swear to God, if ass was nickels, you'd be a motherfucking millionaire. Spread out, boy. Look at you. You a disgrace before God. You is a fat motherfucker, man. I swear. Hey, Mr. Gudger. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine.
All right.
So, how's the new man?
Oh, shit. Clean a motherfucker, man.
Is that a fact?
What's up, my nigga?
A bulldog zigzags through an artificial-looking battlefield towards a bowl of food. A metal canister falls from around its neck.
Shot! God damn it, this canteen fell off. Props! The goddamn thing's canteen fell off.
Okay, we're prepared for that. Mountain, put Otto into the apparatus.
The bulldog wearing a gas mask is brought over to the director by a sturdy woman with hair in plaits.
The hell is this?
World War I vintage gas mask. It's authentic. Strapped on, of course, so it can't fall off. And the animal is free to be as active as he wants. Doesn't inhibit his movement in any way. And I think it really sells the whole doughboy thing.
Yeah, it looks like a fucking joke.
You're absolutely right. The gas mask is a whimsical concept.
How the hell does it eat when it gets to the nibbles ready to eat?
Well, you're absolutely right.
Don't let the client see this. Or that humane fucker.
No, of course
not. Just shut the fucking spot down, Pancake. Then just shut the fucking spot down. Okay, put the goddamn canteen back in the dog. That says he's a soldier. Dented tin canteen, right? Strap it to his fucking collar.
Easiest thing in the world. I just thought...
What?
But you're right. Canteen's much better. Good concept. Let's go with that.
The bulldog keels over. The prop man and the director stare.
What's he doing?
Well, he's, just breathe normally, Otto.
The fucking dog can't breathe.
Oh, no, he can breathe. That thing is... Just breathe normally, Otto.
The fucking dog can't breathe. The fucking dog cannot breathe. Okay, get that fucking thing off of him.
Of course. Easiest thing in the world. Don't have my Leatherman. Mountain, give me your Leatherman. Chop, chop.
Chichu. Make sure that humane fucker doesn't come over here, okay? Distract him. He'll shit for seasons.
There we go.
The dog doesn't move.
Mountain, have electric. Run me a stinger. Don't give up on me, Otto. Mountain, I need two live leads.
Garth, the Jenny's 100 yards away.
God damn it. Otto's gonna have irreversible brain damage in about 30 seconds. Here we go. Okay. Kiss of life.
Otto is fucking dead. What the fuck are you doing? Otto is fucking dead.
An American football game.
320! 320!
Seen from inside a player's helmet, he runs down the pitch and is tackled by a defender. A teammate helps him to his feet, and the whole team go into a huddle.
I left. 90 Tiger, X slant, on one. Ready?
Hut! He ends up on the ground again. The team go into another huddle.
Split left, 68, Z-go, you the man. Hey, butthead!
Huh?
You the man!
Me the man?
On one! Ready?
390! 390!
The player avoids his defender, runs up the field and turns to catch the ball, but it clips the visor on his helmet. A member of the opposing team catches the ball on the rebound, runs, and scores a touchdown.
Hudson, get your ass off the field! Get your ass off the field! Hudson, get your ass off my field! You could catch a cold!
Two black youths park outside a shopping precinct and go into a donut shop. They both draw guns.
Aye, Dragon Lady, we want that fucking money.
We want that donut money.
I'm George, I'm I. Dia, quite him, doya. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Papa Sa.
Whoa.
We want that donut money.
We ain't fucking around, Mr. High Ho.
Look, this fucking thing, it ain't that complicated. You give us all the fucking money, you don't get shot in the head. All
right, you got 3 seconds.
The Oriental shop owner eyes them impassively.
You got 3 fucking seconds, all right? 1, 2, 3, you understand?
We want that donut money.
I'm gonna count uno and two.
With a cigarette dangling from his lips, the owner, sporting a Hitler-like moustache, sticks 2 fingers deep into one of the gunman's nostrils.
His fingers are way the fuck up my nose! Get your fingers out my man's nose!
No, ma'am! Café?
The woman behind the counter throws scalding coffee over the second gunman's face, while the owner smashes the other gunman's head into a tray of donuts. Meanwhile, at a picturesque white portico church, a golden-robed gospel choir is in full swing. The largely female black congregation, all in their Sunday best, fan themselves and jig and clap to the music. Among them is a beaming Marva Munson.
Let it shine on me. Let it shine on me. Let it shine on me. You got to let it shine on me. When you're walking in darkness, you got to let it shine. If you want to see the light, you got to let it shine. You got to let it shine. You got to let it shine. Come on, shine.
sit down, and a jowly, bespectacled preacher with a white carnation in the buttonhole of his immaculate black suit comes to the front of the platform.
I know you all remember that when Moses came down the mountain, hearing the word of God come down that Sinai peak, he caught them Israelites red-handed. What did he catch them doing? He caught them worshiping a golden calf. He caught them worshiping a false god. He caught them Israelites in decline.
In decline.
What did Moses do when he saw those declining, backsliding, never mind sinners?
What did he do? What did he do?
Moses smote those sinners in his wrath. Yes, he did. Y'all know what smote is. I smite, you smite, he smites, we done smote. To smite is to go upside the head. Because sometimes, brothers and sisters, that's the only way. To smite is to remind we got to stop that decline and scramble back up to the face of the Almighty God. Instead of worshiping that golden calf, that earthly trash on that garbage island, the Shadowland. Way outside the kingdom of God, that garbage island where scavenger birds feast on the bones of the backs of Leiden Dam. And so, let us pray.
Later at home in her kitchen, Marva writes out her monthly check for $5 to the Bob Jones University. She opens the door to the professor.
My dear lady, I do so hope this is not an inopportune time for our first practice.
Somebody die?
I beg your pardon. Oh! No. No, I'm not bereaved. Though it is so kind of you to inquire, the hearse is simply a vehicle commodious enough to accommodate all the members of our ensemble. And, of course, our instruments, contrived in an age ignorant of miniaturization. Allow me to introduce my friends, my colleagues, these devoted and passionate musicians.
There's no smoking in this house.
It's the Oriental man from the donut shop.
Sorry.
He flicks a cigarette into the garden and comes in past her. The other musicians unload their instruments from a hearse and all go down to the basement. They're Garth Pancake, the props man from the dog food chute, the inept football player, and the young black cleaner from the casino. The professor turns to the Oriental man, who's staring at the cellar's earthen wall.
What do you think, General? Present any problems?
The General, a fresh cigarette dangling from his lips, looks round inscrutably.
Good, then. Gentlemen, why don't we crowd around and go over the plan?
The professor unrolls a sketch map and switches on a tape recorder.
Gentlemen, this is the Bandit Queen, the gambling den, cash cow, Sodom of the Mississippi Delta, and the focus of our little exercise. Here is Orchard Street. Here is the residence of Marva Munson, the charming lady whom you all met moments ago. Gentlemen, I'm sure you're all aware that the Solons of the state of Mississippi, to wit its legislature, have decreed that no gaming establishments shall be erected within its borders upon dry land. They may, however, legally float. While the gambling activity is restricted to these riverboats, no such restrictions apply to the functions ancillary to this cash besotted business. The casino's offices, locker rooms, facilities to cook and clean, and most importantly, its counting houses. The reinforced, secret, super secure repositories of the lucre may all be situated wherever. Gawain, where is wherever?
You say what?
Where is the money?
Oh, okay, look. At the end of every shift, the pit boss brings the cash down to the hold of the ship in a locked cash box. Then once a day, all the cash is moved down to the counting room.
The professor looks at him encouragingly.
And where is the counting room?
Well, we'll be right there in that square. Where you pointing?
And what to flog a horse that, if not dead, is at this point in mortal danger of expiring, does this little square represent?
Offices. Underground.
Ha! Underground. Underground. During the casino's hours of operation, the door to this counting room is fiercely guarded. The door itself is of redoubtable Pittsburgh steel. When the casino closes, this entire underground complex is locked up, and the armed guard retreats to the casino's main entrance. There, then, far from the guard, reposes the money behind a 5-inch thick steel portal, yes. But the walls, gentlemen, the walls are but humble masonry, behind which is only the soft, loamy soil deposited over centuries by the old man, the meandering Mississippi as it fanned its way back and forth across a great alluvial plain, leaving earth.
The professor takes a handful of earth.
This earth.
And crumbles it between his fingers.
The general here, whose curriculum vitae comprehends massive tunneling experience of the soil of his native French Indochina, shall be directing our little old tunneling operation. Garth Pancake, though a master of none, is a jack of all those trades corollary to our aim. He will be doing such fabricating and demolition work as our little caper shall require.
Happy to be on board.
Gawain is our proverbial inside man. He has managed to secure himself a berth on the custodial staff of the Bandit Queen.
Damn Skippy.
And this brings us to Lump.
The footballer.
To look at Lump, you might wonder, what specialized expertise could he possibly offer our merry little band of miscreants? Well, gentlemen, in the project of such risks, it is imperative to enlist the services of a hooligan, a goon, an ape, a physical brute, someone who will be our security, our battering ram, our blunt instrument. And on our behalf, I wish him a warm Mississippi welcome.
Look at me.
Summer, nigga.
Well, gentlemen, here you are. Men of different backgrounds and differing talents. Men with, in fact, but two things in common. One, you all saw fit to answer my advertisement in the Memphis Scimitar. And two, you're all going to be, in consequence, very, very incredibly rich. Let us revel in our adventure, gentlemen. Let us make beautiful music together. And by all means, let us keep this to ourselves. What we say in this root cellar, let it stay in this root cellar.
There's no I in team.
They all look dubiously at Lump. Later, Lump swings a pickaxe and the tunneling begins. The general smokes and watches impassively. Gawain lounges, scratching his scraggy beard and spiky afro hair. Garth, the bald, walrus-moustached props man in short safari shirt and an elaborate tool belt, holds up a light as the tunnel swiftly progresses. The professor sits back in a chair, conducting the tape-recorded ensemble. The loose earth is shoveled into black plastic bags. The professor checks that the coast is clear before the bags are carried up to the hearse. Pickles comes too.
Trouble's what this world's about. Troubles of this world. The devil's in this world.
In the darkness, the hearse pulls up, halfway across the Gargoyle Bridge.
Troubles of this world, the devil's in this world.
You up the river without a paddle in a line.
Lump watches until a tug steams onto the bridge, towing an enormous garbage barge.
Bubbles, pass me the body bag. Watch me dump them.
He drops some bags of earth into the passing barge.
I try so hard and play my card and pray to God. I ain't involved. I got a call. I'm much appalled. I came to odds and broke the
Pickles, Gawain, and the professor watch as the rest of the bags are heaved over the bridge.
Wrapped in plastic, trash with maggots. No, it's trash. Don't even ask it. Hungry, that's it.
All right.
In the basement of Marva's house, Lump, Garth, and the General work on the tunnel, now about 40 yards long. Pickles watches inscrutably. There's a knock on the cellar door. Gawain whistles. The General beckons Garth out of the tunnel. The Professor watches anxiously as Lump scrambles out after him. Marva opens the door to the cellar. A curtain is drawn across the tunnel, and they all snatch up their instruments and pose. The General flips his lighted cigarette into his mouth.
That's okay, don't stop on account of me.
No, not at all, madam. Not at all, we were about to take a break anyway. The glissandi on this particular piece are technically very, very demanding, and I'm sure we would all welcome a moment of R&R.
Well, I just thought maybe you'd like to see... What have you gotten into, honey? Why are you sweating like that?
Everyone looks at the tongue-tied, sweating, trombone-holding footballer.
Could that one right there?
He plays one bitch barrel full of a sack butt. Ain't that right, Lump? I'm telling you, he can tear it up, right, Lump? I ain't nobody played a sack butt like Lump right there. He, don't be shy, Lump. Don't be shy. Lump, that boy, he go at it like it was some pussy. Oh, shit!
Mind your mouth. This is a Christian house, boy. No hippity-hop language in here. Sometimes it's the only way.
Now listen, you ain't gonna hit me.
I'm trying to help you, boy. Better yourself.
So you should, madam, so you should. Gawain is so far transported by his love of the music of the early Renaissance.
Don't make me know, never mind, he transported. You been smoking.
Oh, certainly not, madam. I understand your indignation, man. And I was offering an explanation, not an excuse. I myself.
Hey, don't be explaining me, dog. You can't read my motherfucking mind, man. You might got your PhD, but I got my GED. Nigga.
A fiery lad. But then, youth is fiery. A fact often remarked upon by the poets of the Romantic era.
My youth, I was in church. I wouldn't walk around fiery. Youth ain't no excuse for nothing.
Marva holds out a wooden flute.
Anyhow, I just came to show you the fife. Otha's fife. Boy, and his own. I thought maybe you being a man of music, you'd be interested.
Oh, indeed, I am.
Cut it itself and bind its holes. The Israelites called it a kali. Yeah, you can read all about it in the Bible. Ain't nothing new under the sun.
Indeed, not.
Her expression becomes sad and reflective.
Gone these 20 years. He was some kind of man.
She looks up at the portrait above the mantelpiece. The professor follows her gaze.
Blood de Kali.
Her husband's portrait looks down on them, stern and God-fearing.
I don't suppose Osan ever turned his hand or turned his lip to blowing the chauffeur?
Martha looks at him askance.
The ceremonial ram's horn sounded by the priests of the Hebrews.
Now I don't know nothing about that. Oh, they never blowed no chauffeur.
Of course not.
Not to the extent of my knowledge. Now, Carl Eade was good enough for my Otha.
Her eyes drift back to Otha's portrait.
Some kind of man.
In the casino, Gawain, pushing his janitor's trolley, finds himself following...
Some kind of man.
A young woman's buttocks.
Oh, God damn! Come on, girl, let me give one little peek. Don't be cruel. Come on, just one butt cheek. Pull that ass out and make it clap.
The girl half turns towards him.
Just because I'm dressed like a janitor don't mean you gotta do me dirty. This motherfucker's the jackpot. Come on, girl. Come on, we ain't blowing these dice. You know, I'm a 7 on the rollout, but I'm a 10 the hard way. And I ain't just talking crap.
Later in Mr. Gudge's office.
Mr. Gudge, she had an ass that could pull a bus. I mean, Gudge, it was more than ass. It was literature.
Yeah, I don't care how big her ass was, but Sam, you're fired.
You say what?
There is no fraternizing with customers on the Bandit Queen. Clean out your locker.
But, Mr. Gudge, I wasn't
fired. Take it out of here, you fired.
You can't fire me. I'll sue your ass.
Sue me? For what?
For fucking punitive damages, man.
Punitive damage?
Yeah, punitive damages. You goddamn Skippy.
Oh, punitive damage.
Yeah, I see why you fired me, Mr. Gudge. It's simple and plain. You fired me because I'm black.
Mr. Gudge takes his feet off the desk.
McSam, everybody on the custodial staff is black. Your replacement is gonna be black. His replacement, no doubt, will be black.
But the fucking judge is gonna be black, motherfucker.
Oh.
And you gonna stand tall before the man. Oh. And your replacement's gonna be black, motherfucker.
Thank you.
The gang meet in a waffle diner.
Oh, my. Oh, my. This is a severe setback. I'm distraught. I'm more than distraught. I am devastated. I'm beside myself. I'm at a positive loss for words.
You still talking okay, though?
Have you all decided?
Madam, we must have waffles. We must all have waffles forthwith. We must all think. We must all have waffles and thank each and every one of us to the very best of his ability. Perhaps if you apologize to the man and gave him flowers, perhaps a fruit basket with a card depicting a misty seascape and inscribed with a sentiment.
I ain't apologizing to that motherfucker. He fired me because I'm black.
You can't do that. You could sue him. Open and shut case.
Fucking ass.
Surely a chocolate assortment has been known to melt the heart of even the hardest misanthrope.
That man ain't rolling over for no fucking candy bar?
We've had a bit of a setback on the tunneling front, too. We've run into a pretty large rock.
Rock.
The general stares into the middle distance.
Very bad. Very bad.
Oh, my.
The female bulldog handler from the dog commercial appears.
Seems the poet was right. Troubles never singly come.
Oh, no, we can get through the rock. No worries there. Easiest thing in the world. Why, we just blow right through it. I got a pyro license. Just bore a hole in the rock, pack in a little plastique. Igneous blows pretty good. And then
we. Hello, Garth. Am I ordering that primer cord?
Yes, Mountain. We were just talking about that. And some plastique.
The fuck is this?
Well, this is Mountain Girl. Mountain is my right hand. She helps me out with ordnance. Helps me with damn near everything.
Hey, you bought your bitch to the Waffle Hut?
I must confess myself to be puzzled as well. I thought it was understood that when it came to our little enterprise, mom was the word.
Of course, I understand that, but this is Mountain Girl. I don't keep secrets from Mountain. That's not how you maintain a loving, caring relationship.
You bought your bitch to the Waffle Hut. The man bought his bitch to the Waffle Hut.
All right, look, you. I will thank you to stop referring to Mountain that way. She is the other half of my life.
Everybody looking at me like I'm some kind of fucker for losing a sorry-ass job. And this motherfucker brings his bitch to the motherfucking Waffle Hut.
Son of a bitch, punk. Shut your goddamn mouth.
You better raise the fuck up. Fuck up.
Gawain pulls a gun.
That shit the fuck up.
Gentlemen, what?
Please, gentlemen, this behavior does you no credit in the eyes of your colleagues, nor in those of the other patrons of this Waffle Hut.
Gawain puts the gun away.
Punk. Oh, look at this. I got blueberry syrup on my safari jacket.
Gentlemen, I propose that we consider the matter of this woman, Mountain Water, to be...
Mountain Girl.
I'm so very sorry. I propose that we consider this matter closed. And we shall choose to trust her, since we have no choice... And since she shall share only in Mr. Pancake's portion of the booty.
Of course. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, you damn right you won't.
Up yours, punk.
Oh, fuck you and the Swiss miss.
The matter of disposing of our coach, igneous coach, impediment coach, is also coach, closed, coach. Settled. Leaves us only with coach. The question of Gawain retrieving his job.
Coach.
Yes, Lump.
Couldn't we just bribe the guy?
The professor's eyes light up and he looks back at Lump in pleasant surprise. That evening, he sits reading in an armchair in Marva's lamp-lit parlor. Marva sits nearby, knitting. She looks up and shakes her head.
You are a reading fool, aren't you, Mr. Doyle?
Yes, sir. I must confess. I often find myself more at home in these ancient volumes than I do in the hustle-bustle of the modern world. To me, paradoxically, the literature of the so-called dead tongues holds more currency than this morning's newspaper. In these books, in these volumes, there is the accumulated wisdom of mankind which succors me when the day is hard and the night lonely and long.
The professor sighs theatrically.
The wisdom of mankind, huh? What about the wisdom of the Lord?
Oh, yes, yes, the good book. I have found reward in its pages. But to me, there are other good books as well. Heavy volumes of antiquity, freighted with the insights of man's glorious age.
He takes off his wire-rimmed spectacles.
And then, of course, I just love, love, love the works of Mr. Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, I know who he was. Kind of spooky.
No, madam, no, no. Not of this world, it's true. He lived in a dream. An ancient dream.
He leans his head back and puts a hand to his heart.
Helen, thy beauty is to be like those Nicene barks of yore, that gently o'er a perfumed sea, the weary, wayworn wanderer
boy to his own native shore.
He closes his eyes, and one hand gently conducts the verse's rhythm.
Who was Helen? Some kind of whore of Babylon?
One doesn't know who Helen was.
Reluctantly, he opens his eyes.
But I picture her as being very, very extremely pale.
Marv appears at him through her spectacles as he swallows hard, seemingly trying to compose himself.
Ms. Munson, I have been trying to figure out some way of expressing my gratitude to you for taking in this weary, wayworn wanderer.
He hands her an envelope.
It's just a little old present. Why, it's hardly anything at all.
Oh, and Mr. Dorr, you are a gallant man.
Oh, madam, I blush, I melt. No, I just happened to hear of this gospel concert tomorrow night, the Mighty Mighty Clouds of Joy, and I thought you and a friend from church perhaps would.
Yes, I have a widow lady friend.
The concert is up in Memphis, so I have arranged a car service to transport you through the...
Oh! Well, Chaplain, how you doing?
Good evening, Miss Monson. I just stopped by here to let you know I did have a talk with wee man, and he told me he's gonna comply with your request in keeping that music down in neighborhood. So you just go and have yourself a pleasant evening.
Wait a minute, I got somebody I want you to meet.
Ma'am, you know what? I'm a little pressed for time.
You got a gang of bank robbers you chasing? Come on in here, say hello. Yeah, we were having tea and...
She drags Sheriff Weiner into the parlor and looks round, puzzled. The room is empty.
Must his own dishes. You can always tell the gentleman.
Somebody was in here, ma'am?
Yeah, with me and Otha.
Well, you know what? Maybe I'll catch him the next time.
Come on up to his room with me and say
hello. I've got a family. My wife's got dinner on the table. I really have to be going.
The bedroom, too, seems empty.
Oh, man. He is neat.
Yes, ma'am. He's very neat.
Probably went down to the cellar to play with his friends.
She glimpses something.
Ma'am, I really got to be going now.
Kneels down.
What?
Ma'am, I really need to be getting back.
And peers under the bed.
Miss Munson, Miss Munson?
Why, Professor? What in the world are you doing having tea down there?
Miss Munson? Oh, Lord Jesus.
The professor lying under the bed with his teacup smiles awkwardly, putting a beseeching finger to his lips.
Miss Munson.
Land of Goshen, child. Come on now from under there.
Miss Munson, my pager just went off. I got to go.
And he does.
I'll meet you and your friend later.
The professor slides out from under the bed.
That was refreshing.
Well, have a good evening now.
As you know, we academics are inordinately fond of wedging ourselves into confined spaces. Mm. At Yale, these students will see how many of their number they can enclose in a telephone booth. At Harvard, a broom closet. Oh, hope I didn't spill my tea.
Mr. Gudge's office.
Well, what the hell is this?
A box of chocolates.
I guess it's just my way of saying,
A card containing a $100 bill.
Well, goddamn it, Mr. Gudge. Look here, I don't know what it's like walking in your shoes. You know, with you being a tight ass and all, and I'm pretty sure you don't know what it's like walking in my shoes. See, Mr. Gudge, there's the custodian, right? And then there's the man inside the custodian. And that's the motherfucker we got a problem with. See, because that man, he got needs, Mr. Gudge, and normally those needs got to do with women with big asses. I guess my point being is, I realize I'm a bunky junkie, but if you would have seen the kettle drums on this girl, Mr. Gudge, whew.
Well, we all human. This apology buys you a one-week probationary period.
Thank you, Mr. Gudge.
Stay away from the customers, McSam.
Gawain gives a thumbs up. Garth clambers out of the tunnel.
This drill bit's getting awfully hot. Gawain, maybe you could fill a Hudson sprayer and spritz it down while I drill.
Fuck you. I ain't your motherfucking house nigga. I'm the inside man.
All right, look, are you gonna have a bug up your ass for the rest of the time we work together?
I'll get this right.
No.
He motions to Lump to sit down.
Me and this gentleman here have to get square. Let me tell you something, McSam. I'm gonna tell you about how I came down to Mississippi. I wasn't born here, you know.
I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
What the fuck?
Scranton, Pennsylvania. Came down here in 1964, Greyhound bus, with the Freedom Riders. Do you know who the Freedom Riders were, McSam?
No, and I don't give a fuck. Just tell me when the fuck they gonna leave, damn.
The Freedom Riders, my fine young man, were a group of concerned liberals from up north, all working together, just like we are here. Involved citizens who came down here so that local black folk could have their civil liberties. So that people like you could have the vote.
Gawain shakes his head, looks across at Garth, and sits up.
You know what, man?
What, brother?
I don't vote. So fuck you.
You little fucking ingrate.
And the bus you rode in on, jackass.
Let's step outside, man.
Fuck the outside. Come on, what?
The ensemble quickly reforms as Marva opens the door.
My friend Miss Fuentes is here, so I'm about to go out. Just thought I'd leave y'all with some cinnamon cookies.
Why, that is lovely.
Ooh, y'all sound good. Maybe you could come by to church one Sunday. Give us a recital.
Well, how kind of you. Our music, however, is, well, how shall I put this? A bit Roman in its outlook. Many of our pieces were commissioned by the Holy See.
Oh, I see, all right. We don't make no big hoop to do by denomination. Everybody welcome at our church. We had a Methodist come in, Episcopalian. Now, back in the 60s, we had a Jew come in. Yeah, he had a guitar.
A Jew with a guitar. Well, if you will excuse me one moment, madam, I shall see you out. If you gentlemen can labor harmoniously in the course of my absence, perhaps upon my return we shall be prepared to explode that vexing old piece of igneous.
The professor joins the two women.
Oh, professor. This Miss Fuentes.
Enchanté, Miss Fuentes. Ravi.
Rosalie, this is Professor G.H. Doar, Ph.D.
Oh, my. That's an awful lot of letters.
Well, no, of course. In my youth, I was known simply as Goldthwait.
Uh-huh.
All right, safety meeting. Let's listen up. General, do you hand me the primer cord? Before we set the charge, we will run through our procedure. I have earplugs for whoever wants them. Just wedge those right in your ears. Now, here we have... Not yet, Lump. Now, primer cord, gelatinite, C4. Time comes, we pack the hole in the rock with the C4 and insert two leads, A and B.
I remember my father saying to me, and it's one of the few memories I retain of the man, from one of his visits home, and how I do cherish it. He said to me, Goldthwait, you are not formed as other boys.
You men learn it?
This is the same procedure we will be using when we collapse the tunnel after entering the casino vault and returning to the root cellar.
He was a self-educated man, didn't have a career as such. But the government did recognize the breadth of his reading by making him librarian of the State Nervous Hospital in Meridian, where he was a distinguished inmate.
Once these materials are combined, only the professionals may handle them. That means me or the general. Separately, they are harmless, completely inert. Why, you could light this stuff on fire, hit it with a hammer.
Outside, the professor turns round in alarm.
What in the name of heavens was that?
Well, I'm quite certain there's absolutely no reason to be alarmed. Why, I'm not even absolutely certain I heard anything at all.
Didn't hear nothing.
Well, something, perhaps. Nothing to decompose us was the sense I was trying to convey. Now, Miss Munson, I will not have you missing your musical recital. Off you go. I shall call the gas company, or the water company, or whatever subterranean utility is implicated in this contretemps. I shall see to the matter, as only a highly educated classicist could.
He hurries back into the house. Lump appears.
Blood! Blood, Professor! Blood!
The general slaps him.
Don't go fucking like this!
There's nothing to make a fuss about. It's perfectly all right.
Jackass, you better get your ass back out of here. Find that shit,
I'm perfectly all right.
Perfectly all right? Jackass! You just blooped your goddamn finger off! The motherfucker down there flopping the fuck around! It's all about nothing. You better get your ass back down there and find it! I'm gonna tell you right now, Nubby, I ain't picking up your goddamn finger.
I gather that was a premature detonation.
Did you tell this motherfucker he can sew the shit back on? It's like that dude whose wife cut his dick off, threw it on the freeway. She just called AAA, they took the dick and sewed the motherfucker back on! Listen up, Jackass! I saw the motherfucker in the porno. The thing still works. Yeah, so it look like a chuked up frame, but that motherfucker be working that motherfucker. Yeah, it's mangly, but he be fucking the bitch all kind of ways with a twisted thing.
Garth, clutching his bleeding hand, slumps weakly into a chair in Martha's hallway. Outside in their cab, Martha and Miss Fontes listen.
They use it in the house to practice music. At a rococo.
Mm-hmm. You ain't gonna catch
his. I suppose we get a fallen comrade to the hospital. The general will follow when he manages to recover the severed digits.
No, really, I'm perfectly all right. I don't know what all the fuss is about.
Good news!
Pickles! Go get him!
The house is an apple pie order, though we do have to get medical attention for Mr. Pancake, who during the disturbance pinched his finger in the valve of his sack bus.
You let the cat out!
The general is even now exercising every effort in retrieving your mischievous little Pickles. Please, go on and enjoy the concert. Bravo. Au revoir, madame.
Pickles, the cat carrying Garth Pancake's severed right index finger in its mouth, heads off into the darkness, hotly pursued by the general. The following morning, the gang are all back in the cellar, poring over the plan.
Despite our setback, we find ourselves on schedule to penetrate the vault here this afternoon while Miss Munson is at church. Having blasted that little old rock to pieces during Miss Munson's choir practice. Garth, can you run us through the game plan for what remains of our tunnel?
Of course. Why, it's child's play now. Easiest thing in the world. Only a couple of feet separate us from the vault. Just the usual spade work until we get to the masonry of the vault, and then we just drill through.
And will you be able to wield the drill with your maimed extremity?
Oh, yeah, I should think so. Yeah, it's totally one finger. Inhibits me in doing finer work, of course. I'll always have to live with that. Maybe, I'm just thinking out loud here, maybe since, as you say, there will be problems later. Maybe, and I actually mentioned this to Mountain Girl. She agrees with me, so it's not just one person's opinion. Maybe, I should get a little extra compensation for the accident.
The professor and Gawain coolly deadpan Garth and his bandaged hand.
Somewhat larger share.
The general also remains impassive.
Well, if this was any other line of work, I'd be getting workman's comp, wouldn't I? I'd even have a pretty good lawsuit.
Wait, so you gonna sue yourself for blowing your own goddamn finger off?
Well, now that is simply asinine.
Yes, but you see, Garth, this is not what you just called some other line of work.
Yeah, no, but
this is a criminal enterprise, not to put too fine a point on it, entailing any manner of risk not involved in honest labor. Governmental regulations and civic safeguards cannot be assumed to apply to antisocial pursuits.
Yeah, but he lost his finger.
He don't give a fuck. That fool could blow his goddamn dick off and don't make no never mind us. We gotta pay this jackass for going around blowing off goddamn body parts? Get your fucking head out your ass, man.
Look, you, there is no cause.
In this instance,
no extra share.
The general resolutely folds his arms.
Okay, majority rules. Like I say, it was just a trial balloon. Hand's not so bad, really. Even get some phantom feeling.
You pull on your prick, you get some phantom feeling.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, nubby.
Well, now that matter is settled, why don't we synchronize our watches before Gawain reports to work? In 20 seconds, it will be exactly 12:16. 15.
But it'll be 12:15?
No, 15 seconds. Well, 11 seconds now. It'll be 12:16. 8.
Lump tentatively raises a hand.
Professor.
5. Yes, Lump.
I don't have a watch.
At the Portico Church.
There'll be no more weeping and wailing.
No, there'll be no more weeping and wailing.
Moored on the banks of the wide river, the Bandit Queen, the floating casino made to look like an old-time Mississippi paddle steamer, gleams in the sunshine. Gawain in his janitor's overalls knocks on the frosted glass door of the casino. The overweight security guard opens it, chuckling.
I'm going home.
Gawain walks through the gaudily decorated casino floor, collects his cleaning trolley, and pushes it through swing metal doors into the corridor of a connecting office building on dry land. goes to the basement of the offices and waits outside the steel door of the counting room, listening. Marva and her fellow churchgoers enthusiastically shuffle and wave in time to the singing of the choir in their gold satin robes.
I'm going out.
Inside the counting room, the tip of a drill appears through the wall. In church, Marva checks her watch. In the wall of the counting room, a hole appears. Marva gets up and leaves. The door of the counting room is opened from the inside, and the general lets Gawain in. Away from the church, in the counting room. Gawain grins as Garth, the general, and Lump empty the cash boxes into black bin bags. Suddenly, Garth grimaces.
IBS.
You be what?
Irritable bowel syndrome. Is there a men's room down here?
Oh, come on. You shouldn't be using the men's room now.
Or a ladies' room. Quickly, IBS.
Man, if you knew you had the runs, why didn't you shit back at the house?
Quickly.
You don't want Elrond finding your stinking ass on the crapper?
No choice. It's a medical condition. Quickly.
You one disgusting individual. You know that? Come on, follow me.
Buttocks clenched. Garth totters after Gawain.
Oh. I feel 30 pounds lighter.
Don't fuck off with your stinking.
Thank you for being so understanding. Not everyone is, of course, which is why the biggest challenge of IBS is educating the public. Afflicts over 2 million people, yet most of us have never heard of it. And it strikes without regard to age, gender, or race.
Oh, fuck, man. I don't want to hear about this shit.
Well, that's exactly the kind of attitude we're fighting.
I guess I never told you that's how Mountain Girl and I met. Had an IBS weekend at Grossinger's up in the Catskills. Of course, the tourist business there has suffered with the demise of the Borscht Belt. So they have various promotions, mixers, so on. This was a weekend for irritable bowel singles to meet, support each other, share stories.
Man, look here. I don't want to hear a single one of them stories, okay?
Now, some of them are very moving.
Not one fucking story!
Look, I didn't choose to have IBS.
Man, shut the fuck up!
There's no cure, you know. Only control. Lifelong condition.
Yeah, you know, and being an asshole is a lifelong condition, too. Just drop the fucking tools.
I'm not complaining. I did meet Mountain Girl.
Garth disappears into the hole. At the other end, the professor quivers with excitement as his gang appears.
Mom, this way, gentlemen. Oh, excellent, excellent. Flawless. Thumbs up.
Marv arrives home, and Gawain starts to brick up the hole in the counting room.
Can't stop shitting. Can't stop talking about shit.
In the cellar, the gang count the money and raise glasses of champagne.
Gentlemen, to a few. We who have shared each other's company, each other's cares, each other's joys, and who shall now reap the fruits of our communal efforts, shoulder to shoulder, from each according to his ability, so forth and whatnot. We have had our little differences along the way, but I'd like to think that they've only made us value one another all the more. Each of us coming to understand and appreciate the other's unique qualities and potencies, and yes, foibles.
Gawain plasters over the hole.
I suggest that we shall look back upon this little caper one day, one distant day. Grandchildren dandled upon our knee, and perhaps a tear will form. And we shall say, well, with wit and grit and no small amount of courage, we accomplished something on that day. A feat of daring do, an enterprise not ignoble. We merry band, unbound by the constraints of society and the prejudices of the common rock. We happy few.
He chokes with emotion.
Gentlemen, to us.
Upstairs in the kitchen, Marva puts on the kettle. In the cellar, Garth uneasily checks his watch.
Charge should have gone off already.
Ah, I do beg your pardon.
Charge to collapse the tunnel. I set it for 8 minutes.
Well, that much time and
More has certainly elapsed.
The four men gaze anxiously down the tunnel.
I need not remind you. It is of the essence of this plan that the money should appear to have simply vanished without a trace, spirited away, as it were, by a ghost.
Of course.
The conundrum of the undisturbed yet empty vault, the unsolvable riddle of the sealed yet violated sanctum, is of the utmost importance, not only to make Akiva more intellectually satisfying, it is exigent as a matter of practical fact. I remind you that if any tunnel is ever found leading to this house, the owner knows all your names.
Moments later, Garth is crawling down the tunnel. While in the counting room, Gawain uses a hairdryer to dry the plaster, covering the brickwork, sealing the hole. The repair is undetectable. He packs away his things and goes to the door. Garth arrives at the explosives and picks up the electronic timer. It has stopped at 14 seconds. As he takes a screwdriver from his belt, his face contorts. Gawain switches off the light and leaves the counting room. Garth recovers, prepares to unscrew the back of the timer, but instead taps it with his screwdriver. He turns it over in horror. It's counting down. Eyes bulging, he drops it and scrambles back up the tunnel. As Gawain pushes his trolley towards the cheerful security guard and the exit doors of the casino, Garth scurries through the tunnel like a terrified rabbit. Garth shoots out of the tunnel, skidding across the table on which the money has been carefully stacked. Upstairs, the portrait of Arthur trembles. Martha looks round at the dust curling up from under the cellar door. In the casino, the chubby security guard stares at Gawain as if fearing an earthquake. Gawain, thinking on his feet, eyes bulging, looks at him inquiringly.
You just fought?
The chuckling guard swallows up the last crumbs in his cookie bag. In the cellar, dollar bills swirl like confetti. The gang snatch at them with raised arms as if doing aerobics.
No, I'm fine. Perfectly all right. Not a problem.
There's no hole left.
Professor!
The four men freeze.
I'm surprised.
Properly speaking, madam, we are surprised. You are taken aback. Though I do acknowledge that the sense that you intend is gaining increasing currency through its use, yes. You have returned from your devotions betimes.
I had to make tea. I want to talk to you, Professor, so don't you be leaving. And you.
The General.
I told you I don't want any smoking in this house.
With a scowl, she hurries off. As she reaches the front door, she puts on a bright smile. The ladies of the congregation in their church-going hats, cotton dresses, and white gloves and handbags stream in. Lump shovels up dollar bills, and Garth and the General sort them into piles. Behind them, the professor is brooding. They turn to look at him.
Dainties.
They resume their work. Above them, the cellar door opens. The professor looks up with a cheesy smile. The General sucks his lighted cigarette into his mouth.
Now, I don't know what you boys been up to, but I know mischief when I see it. I want an explanation, but first, I want you to get your fannies up here with all y'all period instruments. Now, I've been telling the ladies about your music, and they want to hear you play.
She starts to go, then turns back and gives the General a hard stare. He looks back at her with closed mouth, puffed out cheeks, and an innocent expression. He flips out his cigarette, and the professor sits back down.
Professor?
Yes, Lum.
I can't really play the butt sack.
The professor leads the others into the parlor, packed with hat-wearing ladies.
Madam, or rather, Maida, you must accept our apologies for not being able to perform, for as you see, we are short-handed. Gawain is still at work, and we could no more play with one part tacit than a horse could canter shy one leg.
Lump, Garth, and the General take a seat among the ladies.
Perhaps I could offer, as a poor but ready substitute, a brief poetic recital. Though I do not pretend to any great oratorical skills, I would be happy to present, with your lady's permission, verse from the unquiet mind of Mr. Ed Gallan Poe.
He adopts a pose in front of Otha's portrait, one hand on his breast, the other with the forefinger raised, as if giving benediction.
Ladies, thy beauty is to me like those Nicene barks of yore, that gently o'er a perfumed sea the weary, way-worn wanderer bore to his own native shore. On desperate seas long wont to roam, thy hyacinth hair, thy classic face, thy naiad airs have brought me home to the glory that was Greece and the grandeur that was Rome.
Glory, hallelujah.
All eyes turn as Gawain blunders into the open doorway of the parlor.
It was my pleasure.
While the professor sees the ladies out, the other men do the washing up.
Such a pleasure. Safe home. Safe home.
Now I want to know what's going on.
Oh, indeed, indeed. The thirst for knowledge is a very commendable thing. Though I do believe when you hear the explanation, you shall laugh riotously, slapping your knee and perhaps even wiping away a giddy tear relieved of your former concern. Lump here is an avid collector of Indian arrowheads, and having found one simply lying on your cellar floor, a particularly rare artifact of the Natchez tribe.
That's worth.
He listed the entire ensemble in an all-out effort to sift through the subsoil in search of others. And apparently, in doing so, we hit a mother load of natural gas. I myself became acutely aware of the smell of rotting eggs. And it was just at this inopportune moment that the general here violated the cardinal rule of this house and lit himself a cigarette.
The general nods.
So sorry.
Garth and Lump busy themselves with the dishes.
Well, what about all that money?
The men stiffen.
Ah. The money. Well, the money is Mr. Pancakes.
Garth looks round from the sink.
That's right.
Who only just remortgaged his home in order to raise the money for a surgical procedure that will correct the wandering eye of his common-law wife, Mountain Water, who suffers from stevia, strabismus, and a general curdling of the vitreous jelly. Mr. Pancake is an ardent foe of the Federal Reserve, and is in fact one of those eccentrics one often reads about, hoarding his entire life savings, in Mr. Pancake's case, in a hefty bag that is his constant companion. The steel sack.
Don't trust the banks. Never have.
Martha, with hands on hips, looks from the professor to Lump in a pink frilly apron, to Garth and the general, and then behind her at Gawain.
Mm-mm. Don't smell right to me. I'm calling Sheriff Wine.
Madam! Please, please. Madam! No, no. I beg of you. Yes, yes, it is a lie. It is a fantastic tale. You have us dead to rights. But, madam, please, 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 allow me to tell you the truth. In private.
Moments later, alone in the lamplit parlor.
Madam.
Marva eyes the professor's earnest expression with a skeptical tilt of her head.
Madam, we are not musicians of the late Renaissance, nor of the early nor mid-period.
Mm-hmm.
We are, in fact, criminals. Desperate men, Miss Monson. We have tunneled into the nearby offices of the Bandit Queen Gambling Emporium and relieved it of its treasure.
No, an embers.
It's true. The Bandit Queen is a den of iniquity. A painted harlot luring people into sin by exciting the vice of greed with her promise of easy winnings. Oh, yes. Her gains are ill-gotten. But I offer no excuses. Save one. We men have each pledged one half of our share of the booty to a charitable institution. In compensation for the use of your home, we had planned to donate a full share to Bob Jones University. without burdening you with guilty knowledge by informing you of same. But now you have wrested the information from me. There you have it. It is on your table, Ms. Monson. The awful truth.
Stolen money.
But find the victim, Ms. Monson. I challenge you. Even the casino itself, that riparian Gomorrah, shall suffer no harm. It has an insurance company, a financial behemoth that will cheerfully replenish its depleted vaults. That is its function. And that insurance company has tens and tens of thousands of policyholders. So that we have done the calculations, Miss Monson, so that at the end of the day, at the final reckoning, each and every one of those policyholders shall have contributed one penny, one single solitary cent to the satisfaction of this claim.
One penny?
One penny. Think of it, Miss Monson. One penny from those thousands upon thousands of people so that Bob Jones University can continue on its mission.
Marva's eyes glow.
Why, I have no doubt that were those policyholders made aware of the existence of that august institution, each and every one of them would have volunteered some token amount for the furtherance of its aims.
Well, that's probably true.
Sadly.
He brings out his hanky.
The criminal stain is upon us all. But the benefit shall accrue to any number of worthy causes, as long, that is, as the secret stays with us.
Marva's eyes wander as she thinks this through.
Well, I can't hardly see the harm in it.
A demonic glint comes into the professor's eye.
One penny.
He raises one finger in confirmation. She looks away excitedly, but then her eyes drift up to the portrait of Otha, who appears to be pursing his lips. She looks away, disappointed, but firm.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, it's wrong. And don't you be leading me into temptation.
No, madam, I must...
I'm sorry, it's just plain wrong. Stealing.
Madam!
I know your intentions was good.
No, they weren't.
And I won't call the police if you get back the money and y'all go to church with me next Sunday.
And engage in divine worship?
The professor looks appalled.
I made up my mind. Now, you can double talk all you want. It's church or the county jail. Think it over. I gotta feed the cat.
She leaves the room. The professor glares furiously at Otha's portrait, who looks back at him implacably. In the cellar, Garth places the final bundle of money into the largest of the musical instrument cases. The professor plucks pensively at a violin. The general smokes. Gawain muses in a rocking chair.
Motherfuck.
Yes. Unfortunately, Ms. Monson has rather complicated the situation.
Yeah, well, I know how to decomplicate it. You bust a cap in that old bitch's head, everything be simple.
The professor stops plucking. Lump looks up from his sweeping.
Not easy to do. Many reasons. Practical ones, quiet neighborhood, sleepy town. Reasons of moral repugnance, a harmless woman, a deed conceived and executed in cold blood. And I know, Gawain, would that it were simple.
Well, fuck, man, what we gonna do? Get the money back and go to church?
Ah, shut up. Now, quick.
The professor turns to the general.
You, sir, are a Buddhist. Is there not a middle way?
The general ponders and removes the cigarette from his mouth.
Must float like a leaf on the river of life.
He puts the cigarette right back.
And kill, old lady.
The professor bridles.
Yes, yes, I suppose you are right. It is the active nature of the crime, though, that so abhors the squeezing of the trigger and the plunging of the knife. But let us take a moment. What other tools do we have at hand? We have the cellar. We have the cavity. We have masonry and trowel. Perhaps we could simply immure her.
Sure, easiest thing in the world. I can whip up a little mortar and a snow saucer, lay the bricks, anchor in some chains. Mountain Girl could outsource the manacles.
Oh, gentlemen, we delude ourselves. No, shortest and painless is best. Gawain's gun. Retort muffled by a pillar into the brain. The affair of an instant. The only question is, who wields the weapon? I believe it is traditional in such circumstances to draw straws.
Fair enough. Here you go, Lump.
Garth takes the broom.
I'm thinking, though, that since I lost a finger, and I mean literally lost it because that fucking cat, maybe I should be excused from this thing. Hard for me to squeeze a trigger anyway.
You one whining motherfucker. I'll come over there and squeeze your fucking nutsack you keep that bullshit up.
Shut up, punk.
I'll kick your goddamn ass, you legs.
Gentlemen, no special pleading, no exceptions. It is of the nature of the situation. We would all prefer to be excused.
Well, okay, just a trial balloon.
Garth breaks 5 long bristles from the broom and hands them to the professor, who snaps one in half and conceals it in his hand among the 4 longer pieces. The general is offered the first choice. He picks a long straw. His expression betrays nothing. Lump hesitates over his choice, slack-mouthed. And almost collapses with relief when he draws a long straw. Garth is next.
Long straw. You all see it? All that fuss for nothing, punk.
Fuck you.
The professor holds out the 2 remaining straws to Gawain, who glances uneasily between them and the professor's beady expression. He hesitates, then quickly takes one. It's the short straw. The professor smiles smugly.
Fuck!
Watched by the remainder of the gang, Gawain climbs the cellar stairs to the hallway, gun in hand. He sticks his head around the cellar door. Marva sits with her back to him in her rocking chair, knitting. He puts a cushion over the muzzle of the gun and creeps towards her. But as he does so, the room changes. A television replaces the fire in the grate. The furniture becomes cheaper looking, the room untidy, with a clutter of laundry and children's toys.
No, just an explanation.
Coming up.
And Gawain himself has changed to a 10-year-old child cradling in his arms a black and white spaniel puppy.
How did they get in here?
The woman in the rocking chair looks round. It's not Marva.
What you got there, Gawain?
Why, nothing, Mom.
Nothing, my ass! You got a dog there!
No, Marva.
A filthy, noisy little pest of a puppy dog gonna shit all over the house!
He won't shit in the house, Mama. I'm gonna train him, I promise. Gonna train him real good.
I'm gonna train you real good! You wait till your daddy get home. He gonna lay into you proper!
No, Mama, please, Mama, I love you!
Your daddy gonna kick your ass!
Mama's gonna go in ass!
Ain't you gonna use the strap, Mama?
The adult Gawain whimpers.
I'm sorry, Mama, I love you. Snap my dog's ass and everything, Mama.
Marva turns around and notices him.
I trained you to shit in the toilet, Mama. Wipe his ass and everything, Mama.
What you doing? What you doing with my pillow?
Nothing, ma'am. I just came down to get it.
I'm displeased with you.
Yeah, but...
Fine colored boy like you falling in with that trash downstairs. Now, I know your mama taught you better than me.
She falls him to the ground with the cushion. He joins the others back in the cellar.
I can't do it. She remind me of my mama. Look, man.
Why, this is most irregular.
Y'all motherfuckers just gonna have to draw straws again.
Wait a minute. You got to accept your responsibilities, young man, and shoot that old lady.
Hey, man, fuck you and your irritated bow.
Must shoot.
Now, look here. It's the easiest thing in the world. Just pretend her head's a cassava melon and the gun is a melon baller.
What the fuck are you talking about, a melon baller? Look, man, you do it.
Oh, this is most irregular.
Now, look, with equal rights comes equal responsibility.
I'm afraid Mr. Pancake is correct. We cannot draw straws again. The exercise will lose all credibility. If you show the loser can simply beg all.
Must shoot.
Hey, look, man. She's just an old colored lady to you. Come on, man, you do it.
Why, you sniveling little coward.
What did you say to me?
Sniveling little coward.
You whiny motherfucker. I will come up your stanking, irritated asshole with this gun and give you a lead colonic, motherfucker.
You think you scare me, you mewling punk? You don't scare me. Bull Connor and all his dogs didn't scare me. Now be a man.
Fuck. You ain't no fucking man.
Be a man.
You ain't no fucking man. Fucking a 60-year-old with pigtails.
Well, you bastard! Mountain girl is 53! She can ride your ass to jelly!
Oh, yeah!
Give me the
hands! I'm gonna stick my dick picking in there, big old wretches!
Garth, having pushed Gawain to the floor, lies on top of him and stares in horror at the young man's open mouth and gaping, sightless eyes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Lump and the others gather round.
Oh, my. I think he's hit.
Oh, no.
Garth waves his hand in front of Gawain's unseeing eyes.
I'll just check the carotid artery.
He presses two of the remaining fingers on his right hand against Gawain's neck.
That's a negative.
Is he dead, Professor?
Sure he's dead, Lump. I just checked his carotid artery.
Well, this is most irregular. We shall need a hefty bang.
The professor tilts his head around the cellar door. Marva is washing up.
She is in the kitchen. You steal out of the carcass while I dazzle her with conversation.
He goes into the kitchen, positioning himself so that if Marva is to look at him, she will have her back to the door.
My dear Miss Mumpson, I have outlined your position with my colleagues, and then I return to you to render our collective verdict.
Uh-huh.
There was much spirited discussion in an atmosphere of frank give and take. Some of our number were initially appalled at your proposal. They would simply return the money. Some were more receptive.
I don't care if they was receptive or not.
And that attitude, madam, was a factor in our discussions. To a man, I must say, they were devastated at the prospect of not being able to contribute to the respective charities.
Well, that is a shame.
Indeed. But at the end of the day, your position prevailed. So we have decided to return the money, every last cent of it, and attend Sunday services, rather than spend the remainder of our days wasting away at the Mississippi Men's Correctional Facility. Though that was the original preference of some.
Behind Marva's back, the front door closes. Lump, Garth, and the General load the body into the hearse in the dark street outside. Garth straightens up and peers down the road. Silhouetted against the street lamps is a camper van. Its hazard lights flash twice. With a knowing smile, Garth goes back to the house. Lump and the General drive to the Gargoyle Bridge. As a rubbish barge chugs under the bridge, they drop Gawain's body over the railing. It lands in a pile of refuse. In the cellar, Garth is packing up his bags.
You are not assisting with the cadaver?
Oh, no need. Just chuck it off the bridge, easiest thing in the world. I'm just cleaning up here. Oh, that's them. Back already. I just go dump these in the hearse. Yeah, easiest thing in the world.
As Garth climbs the cellar stairs carrying his bags, the professor looks suspiciously across at the large music case on the table where Garth was standing. He walks over and opens it. The money has gone and the case is stuffed with magazines.
General!
Outside in the dark, Garth carries the bags to the camper van. The mountain girl in the driver's seat watches him in the wing mirror with an expectant smile. Garth grimaces and stops in his tracks. And then carries on. The general, slipping out of Marva's house, sprints after him. Mountain girl waits patiently in the driver's seat.
Garth? IBS, dear?
Garth's eyes bulge as the general garrots him with a thin cord.
Oh, come.
At the Gargoyle Bridge, Lump and the general, waiting for a rubbish barge to pass under it, hold a black bin bag from which protrude a pair of hairy legs. The professor, with cape and swagger stick, paces at a polite distance.
Let us go back.
Lump and the general drop the body. And quickly turn back for a second bin bag, from which an even hairier pair of legs protrude. They dump it over the rail. Back in the cellar, the professor holds out three straws towards Lump. He draws a long one. The general draws the short straw.
Excellent. I believe alas we have the right man for the job.
Marva, wearing a nightcap, is asleep in bed. The general creeps out of the cellar. Glancing at Otha's portrait, which seems to stare knowingly back at him, he climbs the stairs.
Oh.
Marva's hands are clasped peacefully across her bosom. A cuckoo clock on the wall in her bedroom shows that it is almost midnight. Twirling the garrote in his hand, cigarette dangling from his lips, the general arrives at the top of the staircase and reaches for the handle of Marva's door. He flips the cigarette on his tongue and sucks it into his mouth. He slips into the darkened room. Marva sleeps peacefully, her false teeth in a glass of water on the nightstand. Patterned lace curtains stir in the breeze, throwing bizarre shadows across the room. The general creeps stealthily towards the bed, firmly grasping the handles of the garrote and stretching the cord taut between his hands. He doesn't notice the cuckoo clock on the wall, whose tiny wooden doors conceal not a cuckoo, but a robed figure of Jesus holding a child by the shoulders. Startled, the general swallows his cigarette. He reaches for the glass of water containing Marva's false teeth. At the sight of the clacking teeth floating towards his mouth, he drops the glass, runs to the stairs, and trips over the cat. Cracking his head against the wall at the turn of the staircase, the general tumbles down to the hallway floor. In the cellar, the professor glances up at the ceiling. Otha's portrait looks down at the lifeless general with a palpable smile on his lips. Later, on the Gargoyle Bridge.
The old woman is a more formidable antagonist than one had imagined.
A tugboat looms out of the darkness. Lump and the professor hoist the black bin bag containing the general's body up onto the railing. They drop it into the rubbish barge. The professor turns to Lump.
Now, Lump, it falls to you to finish the job.
He holds out a pistol.
The comedy must end.
You know, I've been doing some thinking, Professor.
Oh, dear.
Maybe we should be going to church. Maybe she's...
Oh, dear, Lump. Feared those would be your words. Not that I don't appreciate you giving the matter the benefit of your thought, but recall, my dear boy, our respective functions in this enterprise. I am a professor. The professor, as you yourself so often say, the thinker, trained, in fact, in the arts of cogitation. You, Lump, are the goon, the hooligan, the dumb brute, whose actions must be directed by high intelligence.
Yeah, I know, but...
No buts, dear boy. Do not repeat the error of thinking. Now is the moment of praxis. Now, Lump. You must act.
Miserably, Lump takes it.
Well, I can't do it, Professor. A nice old lady like that.
Think of the riches, Lump, that you and I alone shall divide.
Yeah, I know, but...
And reflect also that if you decline to act that's forcing me to do so, you shall no longer have any entitlement to the money. Your offices shall have been nugatory.
You mean you're gonna kill her?
Of course. My hand shall be forced.
I can't allow you to do that, Professor.
The professor grimaces in disbelief.
You allow? Not allow? What presumption? You stupid boy. You very, very extremely stupid boy.
Oh yeah?
Lump aims the gun.
Who looks stupid now?
And pulls the trigger. It doesn't go off. Puzzled, he turns the pistol round and stares down the barrel.
No bullets.
He topples over the bridge into a passing rubbish barge. The professor gazes down.
Perhaps it had to be thus. Lo, in yon brilliant window niche, how statue-like I see thee stand.
A bird flies up from below.
Raven!
And lands on the gargoyle above the professor's head. The neck of the gargoyle begins to crack. The professor smiles fondly at the barge sailing to Garbage Island.
The agate lamp within thy hand. Ah, Psyche. From the regions which are holy land.
The gargoyle falls. The professor, stunned by the falling hooded gargoyle's head, tumbles over the bridge, but the broad cape on his greatcoat catches on the railings, leaving him hanging in midair. A rubbish barge chugs by below. The body falls. The cape, ripped from its greatcoat, blows free from the railings and wafts up into the dawn sky, flapping in the wind like a huge bird. At home, Marva's hand reaches for the glass on her bedside table, falters for a split second when it's not quite in its customary place, and then she puts in her false teeth. On her way down to the kitchen, she notices a dent in the wall on the half landing.
Huh?
She goes to the front door. On the mat is a newspaper. $1.6 million disappears from casino is the headline.
Professor?
In the cellar, all the money is neatly stacked on the table.
Couldn't face the music.
She strolls down to the police station, where a fraught-looking Sheriff Weiner and his deputy are both on the phone.
I appreciate that, yeah. But we don't know what to do.
I tried
that, too. Miss Munson?
Gotta make a statement, Sheriff.
Ma'am, can it possibly wait? We're kind of busy down here today.
Well, I suppose it could wait, but it's about that casino money.
The two officers gawp.
Let me call you back. You know something about it?
Everything. I got it at home.
You got what at home?
The money. $1.6 million. It's down in my root cellar.
How'd you get there, Marva?
A bunch of desperate men stole it and put it there, that's how. See, they was musicians of the Renaissance period. Turned out they really couldn't play, but they could recite poems that break your heart. The ringleader spoke in dead tongues.
Does he now?
I tried to get you to see him. That night.
Yes, ma'am.
I had to holler at him about stealing all that money. Mm. And I guess I made him feel real bad because they just picked up and left without taking the money. Mm. And they let Pickles out.
The sheriff thinks he understands.
So you want us to come over and fetch him?
Oh, no, no, he's back. What you want me to do with the money?
Sheriff Weiner shakes his head at Marva's persistence. Then his eyes light up.
You keep it. Why don't you keep it?
Keep it.
Go on, keep it, Miss Marva.
The deputy gives her a dismissive wave.
Well?
She mops at her face.
It is just a penny off everybody's policy.
Sheriff Weiner stares at her, totally perplexed.
Could... You don't suppose I could...
Yes, ma'am.
Could I just give it all to Bob Jones University?
The sheriff glances in bewilderment at his deputy, whose innocent expression says, don't look at me.
Yeah. That'd be nice. Give it all to him. That's a good idea.
Marva's face breaks into a rapturous smile. She picks up her bag and gloves.
As long as everybody knows.
She sets back off into town, happily greeting passers-by.
How you doing?
As she opens her front door, Pickles races out. The marmalade cat sets off down the neat brick pavement, past manicured lawns, through town, past the sheriff's office, towards the river, and onto the gargoyle bridge. He sticks his head through the railings, looks down at the water, and waits. In his mouth is Garth's severed finger.
I know I've got religion and I ain't ashamed. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me.
Pickles drops the finger into a passing rubbish barge, which carries on serenely down the wide river towards Garbage Island.
From the lighthouse, shine on, let it shine on, let it.
This audio description was by Stephen Dobbin and Veronica Hicks for IMS. The screen fades to black.
Shine on, let it shine on.
written for the screen and directed by Joel Cohen and Ethan Cohen, based upon the movie The Ladykillers, written by William Rose. Produced by Ethan Cohen and Joel Cohen. Tom Jacobson, Barry Josephson, Barry Sonnenfeld. Director of Photography, Roger Deakins, ASC, BSC. Production Designer, Dennis Gassner. Editor, Roderick Janes. Co-producer, John Cameron. Associate Producer, Robert Graff. Costume Designer, Mary Sofras. Music by Carter Burwell. Executive Music Producer, T-Bone Burnett. Supervising Sound Editor, Skip Leibsay. Casting by Ellen Chenoweth. A Tom Jacobson Production. Unit Production Managers, John Cameron and Robert Graff. First Assistant Director, Betsy Magruder. Second Assistant Director, Jonathan McGarry. Associate Producer, David Diliberto. As the remaining credits roll past, the golden-robed gospel choir sing, and they're led by a diminutive choirmaster in a black suit and bouffant afro hairdo. The cast: Professor G.H. Dorr, Tom Hanks, Marva Munson, Irma P. Hall, Gawain McSam, Marlon Wayans, Garth Pancake, J.K. Simmons, The General, Zimar, Lump, Ryan Hurst, Mountain Girl, Diane Delano, Sheriff Weiner, George Wallace, Deputy Sheriff, John McConnell, Wemac Fontes, Jason Weaver, Fernand Gudge, Stephen Root, Rosalie Fontes, Argeline Odoms, Elron, Walter Jordan, Preacher, George Anthony Bell, TV Commercial Director, Greg Grunberg, Craft Service, Hanny Singleton, Quarterback, Robert Baker, Football Coach, Blake Clark. Donut Gangsters, Ahmed Jackson, Aldous Hodge, Donut Woman, Frida Foshen, Gawain's Mama, Paula Martin, Lil Gawain, Jeremy Suarez, Gawain's Sister, Tete Ben, Gawain's Brother, Carly E. East, Waffle Hut Waitress, Jennifer Eccles, Tea Ladies, Nita Norris, Vivian Smallwood, Marin Tasco, Muriel Whitaker, and Jesse Bailey. Church Voices, Louisa Abernathy, Mildred Dumas, Al Fan, Mimi Greenfan, Otha, Maurice Watson. Period Music Instruments by Danny Farrington. Associate Gospel Music Producer, Bill Maxwell. Associate Hip Hop Music Producer, Kiefer Chancha. Trouble of This World Soloist, Rose Stone. Let the Light from the Lighthouse Shine on Me. Soloists Louis Price, Howard McCraney, Linda Maiden. Choir Leader, Ricky Grundy. Gospel Musicians, Guitar and Vocals, Tony Maiden. Bass Vocals, Sam McCrary. Bass Guitar, Pee Wee Hill. Drums, William Kennedy. Come, Let Us Go Back to God, written by Tommy Dorsey. Jesus I'll Never Forget, written by Roy Crane. Any Day Now, written by Fulda Wagoner and Gene Butler, all performed by the Soul Stirrers. Trouble of This World, Traditional, arranged by Henry Burnett, Bill Maxwell and Kiefer Chancha. Produced by T-Bone Burnett, Bill Maxwell and Kiefer Chancha. Trouble In, Trouble Out, written by William Hughes, Brian Scott, Melvin Adams, Ronald Wilson, Kiefer Chancha and Henry Burnett. Produced by T-Bone Burnett and Kiefer Chancha. Performed by Nappy Roots. Courtesy of Atlantic Records. Contains a sample of Trouble of This World, performed by Bill Lanford and the Lanfordaires. Trouble, Lord I'm Troubled, Traditional, performed by Bill Lanford and the Lanfordaires. Trouble of This World, Coming Home, written by William Hughes, Melvin Adams, Kenneth Anthony, Brian Scott, Ernest Franklin and Henry Burnett. Produced by Soul Messiah for SME, LLC. Tahir for Headrush, LLC and T-Bone Burnett. Performed by Nappy Roots. Chorus performed by Rose Stone, Freddie Stone and Lisa Stone. Sinners, written by P. Coleman, T. Jones, P. Dotit and Henry Burnett. Produced by Ninth Wonder for the Planet, Inc. and T-Bone Burnett, performed by Little Brother. Another Day, Another Dollar, written by Brian Scott, Vito Tisdale, William Hughes, Taylor Massey, Freddie McIntosh and Henry Burnett. Produced by TaylorMade and T-Bone Burnett. Additional production by Freddie Mac for Black Rockers of America Entertainment, performed by Nappy Roots. Both Sinners and Another Day, Another Dollar contain samples of A Christian's Plea, Traditional, performed by Claude Jetta and the Swan Silvertones. Let Your Light Shine on Me, Traditional, arranged and performed by Blind Willie Johnson. Let the Light from the Lighthouse Shine on Me, Traditional, arranged by Bill Maxwell and Henry Burnett. Produced by T-Bone Burnett and Bill Maxwell. Performed by the Venice Four with Rose Stone and the Abbot Kinney Lighthouse Choir. Yes, Traditional, arranged by Jerry Peters, Bill Maxwell and Henry Burnett. Produced by T-Bone Burnett and Bill Maxwell. Performed by the Abbot Kinney Lighthouse Choir featuring Crystal Merton. Weeping Mary, Traditional, performed by Rosewall Sacred Harp Quartet. Come, Let Us Go Back to God, written by Tommy Dorsey, performed by Donnie McClurkin, courtesy of Verity Records. Concerto Grosso in D Major, Opus 6, No. 4, by Arcangelo Corelli, performed by Capella Istropolitana, Yaroslav Kurchek, conductor. Minuet Opus 13, No. 5 by Luigi Boccherini, performed by Orchestra di Camera di Roma. Flagello, conductor. Courtesy of Music Copyright Solutions, PLC. Soundtrack available on DMV Columbia, Hollywood Records, Sony Mix Soundtracks. Mike Zoss Productions. Touchstone Pictures.